Lunch with Leon.
Well, hello and welcome to Lunch with Leon. Thanks very much indeed for joining us for another exciting episode, which I hope you'll enjoy. I have to call out that earlier this month, I was elected as the new master of the Worshipful Company of Carmen. That takes effect from October 2024 and lasts for a year. So I've been on the court of the Carmen's company for some time. It is one of the ancient city livery companies, in fact, number 77. It's over 500 years old and continues to do wonderful things with its charitable objectives, its support of the military, and of course, bringing together people with all forms of transport. I really look forward to my year as master, and I hope you'll come along to some of the events that we have planned. Before I talk about my guest, I also just wanted to ask you, it would be really helpful for the podcast if you would give us a review or a rating or both wherever you listen to this podcast from. Those ratings really help promote the podcast to a wider audience. So please, if you get a second after this episode, give us that review or a rating or both. It'd also be great if you shared the podcast with your friends. Please just forward it on, get people in, promote it on your social media if you would. And of course, make sure that you and your friends subscribe so you never miss an episode. So now to this week's guest, who is David Bowden. He's the commercial director at Stagecoach East. We first knew each other when he was a graduate trainee in FIRST. I was really delighted to catch up with him for the first time in a long time at a GBRTT event in Manchester where we were both speaking. He kindly agreed to come onto the podcast, where I started by saying we really weren't doing very well in terms of bus rail interchange.
No, we're not, Leon. And it's such a sad thing because where bus meets rail both grow passengers and grow revenue. You see that in Cornwall, you see that in Devon, you see that what the brilliant work John Lord is doing in Scotland, about to happen in Northumberland. So what we're trying to do now is to say, right, that can be replicated elsewhere in the country. And what we badly need, though, are our rail cousins to come to the table, because we're ready in bus. We understand customers want a full journey.
Yeah, and I've always been concerned, especially in those towns and cities where the bus operator and the rail operator is the same.
Yeah.
So, for example, in places like Bristol, where First Group is the bus operator and the rail operator, I think the public finds it very confusing that one organisation provides both services, but the two halves of the organisation don't necessarily talk to each other.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Leon, I can't talk for First Group, and obviously Stagecoach doesn't do rail anymore, but obviously, what we are trying to say, whatever group we're in, is look, let's talk to each other. I mean, I'm very proud to work with the brilliant Mike Smith and Sam Cullen on the First and Last Mile group, and, you know, which the brilliant Julie Gray's there from Travelline. And, you know, to hear one rail integration manager saying, well, I won't do rail because bus integrations, the bus ticket's too expensive. And eventually, when I sort of bitten down to my fingernails, I just sort of said, can you just talk to us, please? Because, you know, we want to make this work because, you know, in Stagecoach, we're very passionate about something we call customer value proposition. And it's a really simple but brilliant idea. And that is that customers have primary needs, bus, where they need to go, the right time, the right price, they need the right experience waiting for the bus when they're on there. And at the end, when they're trying to complete their journey. So it's in all our best interests for us all to work together to make that full journey seamless.
Yeah, I really think we disappoint our customers. And if it's difficult in the places where there's common ownership, it's even worse where there isn't common ownership at all. And I'm just surprised that it's not higher on anybody's agenda. And as you say, there are a few people in our circle who believe in it, but nothing like enough. And I think that's a terrible disservice to the customers who, frankly, are always talking about integration. They're always talking about common ticketing, all of those things. It's for me, it's a mystery.
Definitely. I mean, but Leon, there are so many easy quick wins. So what we're trying to do is let's sort the quick wins first. Very, very proud that Cambridge is going to be one of the national pilots of electronic plus bus. Now, much more can be done with plus bus. It just needs some decent marketing behind it, and we're going to put a lot of marketing behind it to show to commuters travelling through Cambridge and Cambridge North Station in particular, look, there's a seamless ticket here. Then it's about the rail commercial directors just sharing with their bus opposite numbers what are the core trends? So off Cambridge North, for example, I'm now finally talking to Martin Moran at Gareth Ranglia and say, Martin, share with me what are your core departures from North down to London so I can make sure that the busway buses are seamlessly taking people in there, short wait, onto the trains, and then at night, the buses are waiting for people to take them back. So there's lots of quick wins, and also those horrible getting you to your next departure, posters that appear on railway stations, which are totally pointless and a waste of everyone's time. So what we're arguing is, look, just give the bus operator a frame case as you come out of the barriers. We'll put the information in. We'll keep it up to date because it's in our best interests. And then you can talk about more strategic things like station design and stuff like that.
I know. Well, and David, you know my current soapbox, which I'm trying to lobby every Labour politician I can think of. Louise Hague, I'm talking to you. I think that Plus Bus should be the default rail ticket to all of the Plus Bus destinations. So, frankly, instead of asking for it as an add-on, it should be an opt-out. So, if you're buying a ticket, a railway ticket to a Plus Bus destination, it's £2.50 more expensive, but it gives you unlimited bus travel at the far end. And if you don't want the Plus Bus add-on, well, you're going to have to go and queue at the ticket office to save you £2.50. And what would that mean? Two things. We would have all those £2.50s, which should be distributed to the bus operators like we do for concessionary fares, which means we'd have more frequent services, cheaper fares, and more integration generally. And people, this is a thing that people do. When somebody gets something for free, they like to do it. People would try it. And instead of getting the taxi or instead of getting a lift, they'd say, hang on, I've got free bus travel at the far end. I'll give that a go. So guess what? We might carry more passengers. And I just think the only thing in the way of this is it'll take the government to insist on it. I'm afraid the rail industry will have to embrace it. There's nothing in it for them because they're going to collect the £2.50s and pass them on to us. There's nothing in it for them, but it would just be so good. A £100 rail ticket to Birmingham, say, it's now £102.50, but you've got free bus at the far end. Amazing.
Definitely, Liam couldn't agree more. But I think there's another thing that needs to be tackled as well, which is information. Also, exceptionally proud to have worked with the brilliant Silke Elvery at GBRRT. And Silke asked me the question, could we put bus information through National Rail Inquiries? And I said, Silke, that's been available for the last 3 to 5 years through BODs. As bus operators, we'd give you the feed tomorrow. So I think, as well as have that integrated ticket, if people could plan an integrated journey, first and last mile, and look, Julie at Travelline's already delivering that. So you've got to ask yourself the question, really, could Travelline be a better portal than EnMes if you've got that integration? Because you're right, Leon, if you make it simple and straightforward for our customers, they will do it. And they'll enjoy doing it because, it's a, I mean, we're also hoping with the Electronic Plus Bus to target families who might want to do a day trip out to London to say, look, take the, because we've got no store in Cambridgeshire, Britain's newest, biggest town by the time it's finished. Lots of families there. Look, take your family to London. So definitely just need some common sense, Leon, you're right.
I know. And also, it occurs to me that as we're shifting with softer commuting and more leisure travel, it's even more exciting to do it because people are going to places that they've not been to before for leisure.
Definitely, on without a shadow of doubt, certainly people's travel needs are vastly different now to what they once were. And again, really proud that, to think outside the box and say, right, rather than just having historic bus services that have been there for donkey's years and still don't meet anyone's transport needs, use Total Transport actually and start it with the most fundamental thing. What are people's transport needs? Then overlay the transport network and work out, well, if you've got duplication, if you've got a school bus chasing a normal commercial bus, why not have everybody on together? And then what you can do is unlock providing more service with the same amount of resource. I mean, when I was doing Total Transport, there was modelling done that says if you integrated SEN transport into non-emergency patient transport, you can save anything over £100 million nationally. But the problem is, it's all this empirism. It's my empire. How dare you try to question my empire? And really, what I'm very passionate about is it's not about empires, it's about passengers. We're here to serve our passengers. It's not about our egos, it's not about our empires. It's about giving the people what they want.
Absolutely. Well, let's hope that the new government listens.
Definitely.
We're going to get a new government.
Definitely.
We think we might know which one it is, but we'll see. Definitely. In fact, by the time this is broadcast, we might even
I know. Yes, definitely. Definitely.
But I just hope, and certainly the Labour proposals do include a sort of value for money ticketing thing. I think that their rail reform plans have some obligation that passengers are offered the best price. But I don't see it. I've not seen the integration word there much.
Unfortunately. But hopefully, let's see what happens post July the 4th. Because at the end of the day, money is going to be tight, whatever colour of government we've got. So, look, the total transport philosophy is really, really simple. Why waste resources? Why not join everything together so you're getting the most you possibly can do for existing resources in the system?
No, absolutely. Absolutely so. So what else is happening in your world, David? It's an exciting time.
It is. Well, first of all, our mayor and our civic leaders have got a really exciting, dynamic vision for bus. Our mayor has gone for a precept of transport, one of the few mayors in the country to do it. So what we've tried to do as bus operators is come together through CP Bus Alliance, which basically is that we all still compete, and the last tender round we rather viciously compete, but on key strategic issues, we're able to come together and offer a coordinated solution. We'll be listening intently to what people say their needs are in Cambridgeshire. And we're ready to sort of sit down with the mayor and say, look, ultimately, how buses are organised is for you and the other civic leaders to work out. That's not our role. Our role is to support civic leaders in what they're doing. However, we do have a number of options. But the biggest challenge of all for us, Leon, sadly, is roadworks and people digging up roads. And the new Works and Streetworks Act, hopefully the new government will take a really good hard look at that, because it's far too, now you do need development, we get that 1,000%, but it's far too easy for somebody to apply to dig up a key arterial road with key important bus services on it. They don't even have to say what bus services they're going to impact on doing that. They don't have to show how they've actually engaged with the bus operator to minimise that impact. And so we end up in a scenario whereby we're having to cancel journeys purely because buses are getting congested going into the centre of Cambridge. And we're just trying to sort of plead that something's got to move forward on that, because we as bus operators will deliver reliability for driving a vehicle on every single journey that we say we will. And through the Alliance, we're arguing a lot of discipline that, do deliver what you say you will deliver, because that's how we maintain credibility. But on punctuality, we need the help of the local authorities. Now, to be frank, Nick, the mayor, the civic leaders, they're all really good. It's the utility companies. They're the ones that still need to wake up and, dare I say it, smell the coffee.
Yeah. Well, of course, we tend to think that devolution does everything. But in London, of course, we did have some highway powers. But that's unusual. Most elected mayors don't have any highway powers. And frankly, if you can't control the streets and the parking and the flow of traffic and the traffic signals, and as you say, the utilities, then you're not in a good place at all. I mean, there's some technology, which I think is very good. So I do some work with a company called One Network, which is part of Causeway Technology. And it's used by all the utilities and it's used by all of the local authorities about what the consequences are for digging up the highway. But there's a world of difference between knowing what the consequences are and somebody doing something about it. And we have all the data. We know what traffic flows look like by hour, by day, by week. And if you're going to dig up the road, we have the technology to show what the consequences are going to be. So I think it's tremendous. But as you rightly say, David, that doesn't stop any utility just starting to dig up the road because they feel that their need is more important than ours.
If I may, I'll give you one very quick example of that. The Wands, our most busiest route in Cambridge, Cherry Hinton Village, core part of the route. A lot of people live there, work at Addenbrookes. And other utility company, who must, for various reasons, remain nameless, had a permit to work on Coldham's Lane, accidentally put traffic control on Tevisham Old Drift, which meant the buses were queued right back up towards the Cambridge airport. And when enforcement action was taken against them, the fines are so low, it's cheaper just to pay the fine than, frankly, it is to think about the bus operators. And so really, there's got to be a bit, I think, of the court of public opinion to say, yes, we do need development in the city, but there's got to be some middle ground.
Definitely. And also, You see, there's no downward pressure on the utility companies to do this at the right time of day, the right time of the year, and to use technology to minimize the carriageway take and the extent of the works, because we have all sorts of techniques now that we didn't have years ago, including plating and so on, where some highway works can be done quicker and with less land take than is currently done, because there's no pressure. If these people were paying, as you know, as we know we have in London with lane rental, if you were paying a significant amount of money to dig up the road in the morning peak, and you could do it in 5 days instead of 10, well, you'd do it in 5 days, wouldn't you? Which would suit everybody. Then you don't have to pay, and we don't have to put up with the disruption. So I really hope that as part of all governments' pressure on devolution, that the local authorities get the powers to be able to take the balanced view between the needs of the developers and the improvement of the infrastructure and the flow of traffic. I really do.
And in our patchway, we're also proud to have worked at extreme pace with Nick, the mayor, to deliver £1 fare for the under 25s, which has gone in record time. CPC are up to 3,000 applicants now for the Tiger Pass. And that's really good. And as operators, we've really pulled out every stop to try and get that in as fast as we did. Also on multi-operator ticketing with Multibus, we're very close and we're hoping post-election that that could be the next thing that Nick can announce, that we've managed to sort out the multi-operator ticketing, so that's in place. So as bus operators, we're very passionate that, you know, we want to play our part in developing bus services in Cambridgeshire and Peterborough, and to say, look, there are options available to civic leaders, you know, to sort of take matters forward and build and make an exciting bus network.
Lunch with Leon, in association with Passenger Transport magazine. Check out passengertransport.co.uk.
So, David, I know what I meant to ask you the last time we spoke. My good friend, Professor John Miles, who's been a guest on this programme, continues to advocate for the eastern end of East-West Rail to be some sort of advanced bus rapid transit.
Oh, okay.
And because he's pretty sure that the economic case for that east end of East-West Rail is much easier on a BRT solution than it is on a rail solution. Is that something you've had any exposure to?
We haven't, Leon, and I'd love to talk to him about that, because obviously East-West Rail is currently being delivered and the Cambridge South, first of all, Cambridge South opens next summer, and then we've got East-West Rail from 2029. What I have done, though, is engage with East-West Rail people and said, we have to be really careful on language to ensure that we're not bashing bus by talking about journey times and things like that. It's all about what the options are for people. And I think the East-West Rail team get that. But no, we'd love to talk, because obviously we've now got the busways. CSET has been restarted. And also there's the Waterbeach busway, the Camborne busway. And they'd love to talk further to him about that. Leon, that sounds like a really good idea.
There we go. You heard it here first on Lunch with Leon, introducing an advocate for advanced bus rapid transit and the business development director for Stagecoach in the area. There we are. That's a first for Lunch with Leon, a business connection established live on air. David, so the CP Bus Alliance, what else does it do? Because you chair it, don't you?
Yes, what we do is it's all the bus operators of Cambridgeshire, but we're proud it also includes Fenland Area Community Transport. And what it's aimed to do is to offer a coordinated offer while still competing back to the civic leaders, so we can deliver for the people of Cambridgeshire. So, for example, the making sure the £1 fare for the 25s went through, multi-operator ticketing, pushing hard for something to move on utilities and things like that, and just making sure that, because there's some really good, rich, diverse bus operators in Cambridgeshire, and by working together, we can make an offer to the civic leaders which really will take the network forward. So really it's just trying to compete, but on strategic issues, have a sort of common ground.
And it's very disappointing, isn't it? Because we're hearing lots more about the nationalisation of our whole public transport network, certainly on rail. Labour policy, of course, on bus is franchising. And it seems no matter what we do, even though we've got collaboration between the operators and local authorities and elected mayors and so on. There's still this push, isn't there, to move this even further into what somebody once called the dead hand of central planning?
I think ultimately, Leon, as an industry, we have to be very careful. The final decision on what the mechanism is has to be with civic leaders. And I think as an industry, we don't help ourselves if we try and, you know, offer a particular view. I think the way forward for us is to make sure that those civic leaders are aware of all the options that are open to them, so that when they are looking at whether it be franchising or EP Plus, what each one can deliver, what funding levels are that are needed for each one, and they can make an informed decision as to the way forward. And look, all the operators in Cambridgeshire will all work with civic leaders, whatever they finally decide, because that's what we want to do. I think, though, one thing we have been gently saying is in Cambridgeshire, we've had uncertainty now for a long time, 6 years plus. And I think what we're trying to try to say is, look, you know, whichever way you want to go forward is not a problem, but please can we start the process of going forward on that way forward, so that we're not in another 6 years worth of uncertainty, because it does impact on investment decisions. It does impact, and certainly some of the smaller members of the Alliance, you know, they're looking at things like, do they buy new buses next year? Because if it's franchising, you know, does that, you know, will that sort of be affected by that? So really, it's just about offering options to local civic leaders, but also asking for, can we please move forward with something?
Indeed. Well, I don't know whether you heard this week on the media, Mark Harper was on, and at the time of this recording, we're in the run-up to the general election. Mark Harper was on air saying the majority of journeys made in this country are by car, and it's about time that people supported the drivers. Well, no bigger piece of electioneering from a Secretary of State for Transport have I heard than the self-evident attempt to woo the car driver and the so-called war on motorists. I don't think there's ever been a war on motorists. All I've ever thought is that, in fact, the balance between ordinary motoring and other forms of travel, including walking, cycling, and public transport, was being redressed.
Yes.
So I've never seen a war on the motorists. All I've seen is the beginnings of some redistribution of road space and priorities and costs. And I don't know about you, I haven't detected a war on the motorists with the freezing of fuel duty for goodness knows how long.
No, definitely not, Leon. Leon, I think at the end of the day, no self-respecting person in buses or public transport would ever be daft enough to go for a war on the motorists. That achieves nothing. What it's about, though, is encouraging the motorist to say, right, okay, there's an attractive option there. So if I've got a car, actually, do I leave the car at home that particular day? Like, for example, going back to Plus Bus and families. Well, if we fancy a trip into London, do we actually jump on the busway through some Cambridge's beautiful countryside to Cambridge North rather than driving to Cambridge North Station? So very passionately believe if you give people options and also listen and react. I mean, we have a principle we call customer value proposition. I mean, it's very, very simple. People have secondary needs. It's got to be a pleasant experience waiting for the bus, getting on the bus, and then at the other end. And that may hopefully get people to come back and try us again. So that's what we're very focused on. Understand our customers' needs, but also evolve them over time. Because I think part of the problem in our industry, Leon, is, you know, you're one of the groundbreakers of thinking outside the box in the early days within the industry of, we can't do buses exactly the same way we've done it for 40-odd years because people's travel patterns are different. So if we think outside the box, offer evolving options to people, then we stand the best possible chance of starting to erode away at the number of car journeys and even getting people to get rid of second cars.
Completely. I've always thought this, you know, going from two cars to one is not a terribly big step, actually. Going from one to zero is a very big step, because you know deep down in your heart, you're exposed if your child has appendicitis at 3 o'clock in the morning, or there's a relative who needs your help urgently and so on. So going from one car to zero, I think we have to recognise is a big step. And you and I both know that owning a car is the stupidest investment decision you make in your life, by having this rapidly depreciating asset on your driveway, something that you use an average of 2 hours a day out of the 24 available. So it's a stupid decision. However, it's a free country and people can do what they like. What we're trying to do is to encourage people to walk past it and public transport, because it makes such a lot of sense. You can talk, you can use the telephone, you can work, you can read. If I don't have enough public transport journeys in my life, I fall behind on my reading.
I'm the same.
So those journeys are super important.
I mean, Leon, whenever I go around to various events as stagecoach, I'll go by bus and by rail, because I like to be able to work. I like to be able to, you know, sort of, I don't want the stress of being caught in traffic jams or anything like that. So really, it's just about, but I think it goes back to that of, if we can get bus rail integration to work, if we can get information to work, and if it could be one common source of how do you find out about options, then people will come without a shadow of a doubt, because people like the simplicity. And obviously, and certainly in our part of the world, people are very environmentally aware. I mean, we're proud at Cambridge Depot, a third of our fleet is now electric. And, you know, sort of, and the wow factor that, you know, families feel when they get on the bus, on the EVs and things like that, it does make them think, well, you know, perhaps my perceptions of bus are a bit old, and let's go out and try and find the new modern bus.
Indeed. The other thing which has always worried me, when I think about why people don't use public transport, I suspect that one of the reasons, and we suffer a bit of it when we go on holiday, so we're in another city or town or country, you are worried you are going to be whisked off to the wrong place and it's going to be impossible to get back. That's one of your worries. If you're in charge of your own transport, then that's not so much of a risk. And when I thought about that a lot, it suddenly occurred to me that, of course, we don't teach proper geography in school anymore. And if people don't know geography, then it's actually quite hard to use the information that we provide, because it does require a working knowledge of where places are and where places are in relation to other places. Because if you've got rudimentary geographic knowledge, you know not only the place you want to go to, but roughly in which direction it is and what places you'd pass to get to it. And I just wonder how, as a public transport industry, we overcome what is geography ignorance from young people now.
I think, Leon, it's about working with schools, because, I mean, I was very proud of my local government days to be involved in independent travel training, where with SEN pupils, you embed travel training into the curriculum, because really traveling can be embedded into geography, maths, PE. And I worked with a really inspirational guy called Andy Turl, who's unfortunately retired now from Kingsmill School in Driffield. And Kingsmill led the way nationally in terms of what it was doing. And I think if we could broaden that out into, you know, sort of all young people, I mean, a Bedford Borough Council, for example, tried a brilliant Year 7 taster day, whereby they actually had someone go in, talk about geography, PE, how to use buses. And then there was a voucher scheme, and they were quite surprised when I said, well, for the money you've got available, Stagecoach will allow a parent to go with the young person with that voucher. Because if you ask a parent, will you allow your Year 7 to go out on their own, they just won't do it. And it was really good that now the two that were in Bedford are now in Cambridgeshire, a lady called Marianne Spilling, under Jez Tuttle, and, you know, sort of, and Marianne and her colleagues are very, very good at this type of thing. And hopefully we'll be able to see that. And then we can get young people just trying bus.
And I'm afraid the old journey planner has a lot to answer for here, because in many ways it makes life easier for people, and nothing wrong with that. But of course it drops you out of the need to know about the geography. And I don't know about you, the other day I clicked on a button that said timetable, but it wasn't a timetable, it was a journey planner.
Yes.
And you and I are old enough to like a proper timetable, because we can see more options out of the timetable than the journey planner. And as you and I have talked about before, the journey planner can be optimized, but not necessarily for you. So I think it is a great pity that we are not helping enough for young people in particular to get confident on the network and to learn about where places are. And frankly, with all the bright people there are in technology these days, you'd think somebody might be on it.
Definitely. Couldn't agree more. I think you've hit the real nail on the head there. But there are lots of options out there. You have NRES, you have Travelline, all the bus groups have got their own apps. That's what it needs us all to get into a room and say, look, this is about the customer at the end of the day. You know, how do we actually just have one source of information? Now, going back to my Total Transport days, some brilliant people in Lincolnshire County Council developed a journey planning, a specification for journey planning app that took what you wanted and fired it to the relevant bit. So if you said, I've got 20 scouts that I need to get from Hull to Bridlington, it took you to a community transport portal, which allowed you to get there. If it was, I've got a son who needs to get to school, it took you to apply for school bus pass. And even though the specification was written as part of the total transport initiative, it never went forward. And that was such a wasted opportunity. And I think going back to the work that the brilliant Julie and the brilliant Silke are doing at GBRRT, now it's got to be with Rail Delivery Group, bus, and others. So how do we take this one forward? And what we're trying to do, Leon, is we're trying to pull together a conference of bus commercial people and rail commercial people in Birmingham, somewhere nice and central. So one, we can talk to each other, we know who each other are, and we can start to tackle things like that to say, rather than being about, well, it's my specific app, it's my specific thing, actually, what's best for the customer? And you're right, we can definitely achieve an awful lot from that.
Indeed, I'm sure that's right.
I think I would just basically say that I'm honoured, I'm privileged that I've gone from someone with an interest in buses to someone who has managed to deliver four stagecoach, £5.1 million in 2 years. I'm proud to have developed like that. And Leon, they say the importance of mentoring. Can I be very frank and say you tried to mentor us as graduate trainees, and it was such a shame when you left because there was no mentoring whatsoever. And thankfully, the culture of the bus industry has now got back on. And I'm proud to be part of Stagecoach because, our new chief exec, Claire, razor sharp mind, very dynamic person. And, we're given the freedom and the ability to innovate, think outside the box, and really deliver for customer.
Amazing. Well, David, I am very pleased and proud and thrilled, and it's fantastic to see you in this role. Of course, in my mind, I'm still 35, so I don't think of
Yes,
I
definitely,
don't
Leo.
I don't think of myself in the position that you describe, but I'm afraid it's true.
But you helped a lot of us, Leon, and such good ideas like the one about getting shunters to move buses forward so bus drivers came out of booking on and got straight on the bus.
I didn't get their hands dirty. I know exactly.
And I think it's Moy Lockhead, with all due respect to him, I think he sometimes he struggled. And I never understood the intense rivalry between Moya and Sir Brian, because it's all about how do we move things forward,
I characterize it as people like Moya and Brian and others were the right people to move us from where we were to where they took us. But actually, the journey since then has required a different set of skills. And, they were part of the sort of swashbuckling deregulation, privatization era. And of course, there was rivalry. Now we've moved on. And let's face it, nearly all the major groups have now changed their owners
definitely.
in the past few years, including Arriva last week with I Squared. So it's a whole new game.
Definitely.
And I do hope that the new owners are as fixed on their revenue challenges as they might be on their cost challenges, because we're not going to save our way out of this current business situation.
Oh,
Well,
definitely.
we've got a revenue problem. So I hope people are focused on the revenue.
Leon, it goes back to when I was a graduate trainee. I had it drilled into me, you must make 15% profit margin. And I once asked someone, why 15%? Because I presumed there must be some kind of scientific formula. And it was, no, how dare you question that? What right have you? You're just a trainee. And I genuinely wanted to know because I think part of the problem with the old way of doing buses was people wanted one way of doing things nationally. And every market's very different. And what you've got to do is try and see what your market can give you and just maximize
For sure. So my guest today on Lunch with Leon has been David Bowden, who is the Business Development Director for Stagecoach East, and as well as being Chair of the CP Bus Alliance. This has been Lunch with Leon, which is produced in conjunction with Passenger Transport Magazine. Go across and check on their website to see everything that's going on in our bus and rail industry. We've had a fabulous conversation today. David and I are evangelists for bus rail integration, of making sure that our public transport is provided for the benefit of the passengers, not anybody else. So great privilege to talk to David. David, I wish you very well, and thanks very much indeed.
Thank you, Leon. Pleasure. Thank you.